Citizen Kane, no. Godfather, seen it. Casablanca, no. Raging Bull, no. Singing in the Rain, no. Gone with the Wind, a little bit. Lawrence of Arabia, no. Schindler's List, no. Vertigo, I saw it for 10 minutes. Wizard of Oz, yeah, I've seen it. City Lights, no. Never heard of it. Searchers, no. Star Wars, yes. Psycho, no.
Hello and welcome to Haven't Seen It. I'm Jen Stansfield.
I'm Sean Merrick.
And this is the third episode of the Haven't Seen It podcast. We apologize that we did not post one last week. Due to illness, we were not able to do so. So, but everything's fine now.
Yay! We're back.
Yay. So yeah, we're going to go ahead and talk about the two movies that we saw this week. We saw Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. And
which that was our, I think what we do now is we see one list movie from the AFI list. So yeah. That was our list movie, and then we decided to do Less Than Zero, which
yes.
I guess would be a significant movie based on its cultural cultural relevance. So
yeah, I got some stuff to say. About
yeah,
that.
We'll get to that. But Butch Cassidy
and Sundance Kid. I guess this was pretty much the role that, or the movie that launched Robert Redford to stardom.
Yeah, that's, I mean.
Paul Newman's in it. He's not selling cookies, but he's in it.
Yeah, you know the good thing about that I really enjoyed about this movie? But I'll be honest though, I was falling asleep.
Yeah, I fell asleep through the end. I actually did not see the end. I had to read about it on the internet.
Yeah,
but honestly, it was only like the last 10 minutes. I made it all the way through, and then the last 10 minutes, I was like, no.
Yeah, I was having trouble trying to keep awake for it. Granted, like, yeah, you know, life gets intervenes, and, you know, you try to, you know, you have a long day, and you're watching this movie. And the thing about these movies, these old classic movies, is that they're epically long.
Yeah.
Or at least they feel like they're epically long. And not to say that they're not good, it's just that that's mentally, you have to be, I think we're learning, you have to be in this mindset.
Yeah, you really do have to be, like, ready to do some sort of undertaking when you watch these.
Right.
Because you can't watch them when you're, you know, just come home from work, you went to the gym, you're tired, you know, you've screwed around on the internet, and, you know.
And you're like, oh, I'm going to watch a classic movie.
No, you're not. You're going to fall asleep.
Yeah.
Because that's what's going to happen. Because we have much shorter attention spans because of all the little gadgets we have hanging around us than they did back then.
Yes.
The only thing they had to stare at back then was the movie screen. We have many more things.
Yeah. But, that being said, though.
It was good. I enjoyed it. It was, I mean, just for those who don't know, just a quick, like, summary. It's about Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. It's about them robbing shit. And about them going to Bolivia and dying. And that's pretty much the whole movie. In a nutshell, that's it. You got it.
No, I mean, that's pretty much the nutshell. I mean, you gotta have a... I mean, but the thing is, though, it's very, I guess you can say it's a pretty tight movie in the sense that it starts off right away because you're introduced to these two characters, two very distinct personalities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got the very much more stoic Sundance Kid, who's an awesome shot, and then you have the very glib and very, you know, he's just generally outgoing
Butch
Cassidy. And, you know, together they have this little hole-in-the-wall gang, and they're going around, and they're, you know, robbing trains,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, and being the roost of the town, and it just having that notoriety. And what I really enjoyed about it, though, is that it's a Western, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a Western, but it doesn't feel like a Western in a way, because the way that these actors are acting, like, I didn't really, but it wasn't so much that they're acting out of their element. It's just like they're just kind of more like a more modern personality, and the flourishes of that of just being like a person that was living in 1967, as opposed to a guy that was living in the back in the 50s or in the 1890s or whatever. The movie was taking place during the Spanish American War.
Yeah. Well, I think too that you do see it's a little bit of a precursor to a lot of the stuff that we see now. Especially just because they're sort of smart alecky, they're a little bit snarky, they're sarcastic, and it is a little bit jokey. There's definitely some jokes when they're being chased. They're like, who are those guys? You know, the whole thing, and they keep bringing it up, who they could possibly be chased by. You know, there's jokes being thrown around. I mean, all of a sudden, like, it breaks into, like, random pop songs when they're riding a bicycle. Like, it's almost what I said when we watched it was it kind of felt like a precursor to a Quentin Tarantino movie. And the reason that I say that is because it starts out, it's shot strictly in sepia tones.
Yeah.
For this one scene. Then you go into color, and it's fine. And then all of a sudden, you know, you've got Butch Cassidy riding that chick around on a bike, and to raindrops keep falling on my head. And then you have in the middle of the movie a photo montage back into sepia. Like, just a very, just the way that Tarantino does things like that, that's the reason I felt stylistically it felt like a precursor to something that he would do.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, and that's kind of been, I think that's probably what really made this movie culturally significant, because it was, because before this, I would imagine that Westerns were very,
very Western.
Like, okay, you know it's a Western. You know, you got, you know, the guns, the horses, the, you know, the dusty
John Wayne.
John Wayne, you got them doing whatever it is, you know, the saloons and all that. I mean, just all that stuff. But this felt just like this, there's like this polish to it that it's like, okay, yeah, you're, you know, it's a Western, but it's, but it's like almost you could have put it in this, in another context, and it just would have felt, still would have been fresh. Like if you go put it in the 30s, like if let's say if it was Bonnie and Clyde, you know, but it was the same, but there wasn't like, it didn't feel dated. And yet I was not disappointed by that.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's almost like you could see, especially Butch Cassidy's role.
Yeah.
Like, being played today, probably with the exact same lines, and going over just fine.
Yeah.
By, like, Owen Wilson or something ridiculous with... Being, yeah, basically
because,
being Owen
Wilson. Because they can, you know, quick lines.
Yeah,
just a lot glib. Of just the dialogue. Every dialogue, piece of dialogue makes sense.
Yeah,
everything is, you know, it's terse, and it, you know, moves the plot forward. And you know, it's just a, you know, William Goldman, obviously a master of screenplays. You know, just putting perfect words into the mouths of these characters. You know, and just making this world believable that you're not, you know, you're saying you don't feel it just didn't feel that way. I mean, granted, you know, mentally I was trying to watch this movie and I'm trying to be like, okay, you know, how am I following this right? You know, am I absorbing the cultural impact? But I think in the end it's just there's a certain, you know, there's a certain shine to it that made it stand out, and then you realize, okay, this is why this is such a great movie.
Yeah. Well, it definitely stood out, I think, and just for various reasons, but I guess it was so popular and took in so much money that sequels, you know, Hollywood apparently has always had a hard on for sequels. They just started making like 100,000 of them just based on this movie.
Yeah.
You know, just,
well, why not?
Shitting out sequels left and right. So, you know, I guess Hollywood does the same thing no matter what time it is.
Yeah, why not? Hey, I'm not, I think, you know what?
Well, I don't know. Pirates of the Caribbean 9,000, we could probably do without.
You know, maybe in 9,000 years we'll have one.
That Johnny much. Depp still.
Johnny Depp's
still
CGI,
doing his little thing.
CGI mod, because it's all going to be CGI by then, but.
There will be no actors.
There will be no actors. There will be no people. There'll just be robots. We'll be all holograms. We'll be into machines now. But no, you know what? The movie. Yeah, but overall, though, I think there's a lot of cool things, like individual things about the movie, like just the dialogue, but also just like this a slice of life of these bandits that are just trying to, you know, just be bandits. You know, they don't want to be bandits. They don't want to be anything but bandits, because they found that there's an easy way to life. And this is
it's stealing.
It's stealing.
And blowing up trains.
But you know what? But getting away with it and being notoriety, having notoriety, and just, you know, being, you know, I guess if anything, being happy and just not being so intense. Like I just, for some reason, I kind of enjoyed their carefree attitude, but not in so much of the carefree, like, oh man, we're hippies and we don't care about any consequences. Like they're.
Well, they don't care about consequences. I think that's the whole point. They ran away.
Or at least with Butch Cassidy. I mean, I really dug Sundance Kid more though, because just because he's like you have that dichotomy between the two pair of personalities, and it just there's so much fun to be had because it's like the straight man and everything. The rapiness was
so there's this scene where like Sundance shows up at this chick's bedroom and like is just sitting there and he pulls a gun on her and like makes her take off her clothes, which is creepy. And then, of course, it comes, as we knew it would, to be like, oh my god, Sundance, you're late, you're never on time. It's his girlfriend. Creepy rapeness.
Well, also, were they, since this was the late 60s, were they sharing, was this kind of a deal, he shows up, like, Sundance, or, Butch shows up, with the bike,
It was like, she even said, she was like, oh, if we had met first, we would be together. And he's like, yeah, that's totally true, but they weren't, because Sundance.
But who knows? I mean, well, it's the Wild West, every man for himself.
If it happened, it was not.
It was in the movie.
It was not in the movie if it happened. But still, I thought that was kind of creepy.
I thought it was funny,
but at the same time, I'm like, I'm not going to judge. I guess some women have rape fantasies. But still. Creepy. Rape-tasticness.
Yeah.
In a very popular movie. Gee, shock.
Yeah, well, you know what? Breaking taboos. It's the late 60s, early 70s.
It's not, but sadly, it's not a taboo. You see the same shit today.
Well, I know, but I'm saying, but back then, this was,
Well, maybe back then.
For a movie that was as popular as it was kind of interesting that that sort of scene would take place. But also, there would be, I thought it was just interesting that this girl...
who had horrible 60s hair. Okay, maybe not horrible. But it was very obvious that this was filmed in the 60s because she looked like she just stepped right out of a, a commercial for, I don't know, what the fuck was on in the 60s.
Peyton Place.
I don't know.
No, but I believe her name was Etta.
Yes.
And Etta, I thought her character was interesting because she would be like, well, I got nothing else going on. You're the most exciting things in my life. So you know what? I'll come to Bolivia with you. Because, And if...
Well, in the actual... She really did. Because, obviously, this is loosely, very loosely based on historical fact. And they did actually... They did go to Bolivia. And she actually did go with them.
Yeah. And, and I think that's...
And they're not sure if they actually died down there.
They think they did,
but they don't know. So there have been reports that maybe they lived, maybe they came back to Utah, the whole thing.
Yeah.
Maybe they went somewhere else, but they probably died in Bolivia.
Well, that being said, I feel bad not having much more to say about this movie than I did. Well, because I say, I enjoyed it for what it was, and it wasn't classic.
It was a buddy comedy.
It's a buddy comedy. It's one of the, probably one of the first true buddy comedies, and they had two very distinct characters, mm-hmm. polar opposites of each other, and you had a girl involved, you had a lot of tension of Chase being involved,
Paul Newman
doing his thing. I mean, it's just a fine piece of cinema, and
it was enjoyable. Watch it when you actually will be able to stay awake.
Yes,
we'll go with that. Yeah. So then the next movie that we saw was Less Than Zero, which is based off the book by Bret Easton Ellis of the same title. I have many thoughts on this, but I'll go ahead and let Sean say what he was thinking.
Here's the thing. Okay, I've been kind of fascinated by Bret Easton Ellis since I saw American Psycho.
Yeah.
And so I've heard a lot about this movie, and I even read up on the book, got the synopsis, back in, for Less Than Zero. And I was interested, and I was like, "Well, I wonder." And I knew the movie was different, but I was wondering, how.
Sorry.
Jesus. I was wondering how. I was wondering how different it would be, and so I'm looking. I'm watching this movie, and I'm just like, "There's not enough drugs." It is a movie about drugs.
Let me explain. All right, so I've read the book, right? And I read the book actually fairly recently. 2 weeks ago, maybe, just because I'm on a kick where I've decided I needed to read more. So I read Lesson Zero. All right, so the book Lesson Zero and the movie Lesson Zero are two completely fucking different stories. And if you actually want to read a book that's nothing about just horrible isolation and desolation and people who don't care about each other doing tons and tons of drugs and fucking... read Lesson Zero. if you want to watch a movie about some poor friend who's on drugs and who gets pimped out, but there's like friendship and people actually care about each other, watch the movie Less Than Zero. They're totally different. The only thing that's the same is the names of the characters and the setting and the Julian gets pimped out. That's it. Everything else, totally different. We're sitting there watching the movie and I'm like, that never happened in the book. That never happened in the book. That didn't happen in the book. Why isn't the main character on drugs yet? That never happened in the book. It's, they're not the same. They are not, there's nothing similar
about them. Because Hollywood got scared, basically. Hollywood got scared because it's, you know, a movie about drugs in the height of the 80s boom of drugs.
Yeah. But not only that, but then he's on, okay, here's another thing that was a problem. Julian, this is, okay, the book and the movie are both set in the 80s. The movie, I think, was made in 85, right?
The movie was made in 80, well, probably, it came out in 87, so you okay. Probably figure 86.
All right, so in the book, it written in the 80s, set in the 80s, the big scare was supposed to be heroin. Like, that's what's in the book, and it's supposed to be very scary. In the movie, we have Robert Downey Jr. acting high, which I'm sure was very difficult for him. And he's on crack. Because as we all know, any of us who lived through the 80s, like, crack was the big scary, scary thing that came out of the 80s. Was, oh my god, crack.
Yeah.
So, they even took away the heroin, and they replaced it with crack. And so he's in debt to this one guy for hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Because of crack.
Because of crack.
Now, I've never dealt with crack, but I've heard that crack is cheap.
Yeah, it's supposed to be. And but not only that, but like in the book, in the movie, Julian is in debt to the guy who pips him out because he's trying to get a record label started. Mm-hmm. And he has like dreams and goals. In the book, no. No one has dreams or goals. Nobody does anything but fuck and do drugs. And nobody cares about anybody else. So the only reason Julian isn't in debt to this guy is because... I'm sorry, the cat's attacking the cord.
There you go.
The cat wants to be part of the podcast. The only reason Julian is in debt to this guy is because of drugs. Because of heroin. So, in the movie, it's like, he makes it out to be like this poor guy who like, oh, he just took a wrong turn and just sort of got hooked on drugs. When in the book, nobody gives a shit about anything else. And the only reason that they do horribly depraved things is really because they have nothing else to do with themselves.
Right. And I didn't necessarily feel that in this movie that Clay, who was played by Andrew McCarthy in this movie... Yeah, he did not. There was no like I don't know. Maybe it was just the way he played it, but it didn't really feel like he really cared so much about his friends. You know, like
it would have been better if he actually didn't care about his friends because he wasn't supposed to.
Well, he didn't seem seemingly at first. You know, I think he kind of thought that there was some sort of like spark there between him and Brooke.
Which, Blair, whatever her name
is. You know, they're talking.
Again, not in the book. They were supposed to be together, but there's even a scene where she asks him, like, did you ever love me? And he can't answer her because he never loved her because he didn't care. He's also bisexual and he has sex with men and women in the book. Totally didn't happen in the movie. He's nothing, but he's a huge cokehead in the book, which didn't happen in the movie.
Yeah, you know what? And
so I was kind of pissed off. So I was like, this... Okay, after I finished the book, I felt like if I was planning on having children, which I'm not, living in Hollywood, I would move anywhere else but here and make sure that my children were never around such horrible, self-centered, rich people as the people who are described in this book. But now, apparently, they're great friends who just care.
Yeah, no, yeah. I was.
And well, go ahead.
Yeah, I didn't buy a lot of stuff in this movie, particularly like because Robert Downey Jr. like he's running around and he's
high.
He's being ultra goofy and Andrew McCarthy's just like, well, okay, I guess I'll help you, you know. And then he tries and he's like he talks to him for he says a few things to him. It kind of felt like I was watching a role playing video game. And, like, you're the main character and you're choosing, like, the dialogue you say, but you're saying it with, like, such kind of, little, like...
It's a robot voice?
Yeah, like, in a robot, like, there's no real emotion or reasoning behind it other than just you have to choose to say that. And so he says it, and then Robert Downey's like, ugh, you're crazy. Or then Blair's like, save him, you know. And then you have to, you know, then you have to, you know, deal with, you know, the drug dealer. Which, by the way, I've determined that no person named Rip has ever produced anything good or been associated with anything. They have some sort of problems. Think about it. Rip Torn, Rick Taylor, Hulk Hogan's character from No Holds Barred, Rip. You know, there's always something up with a person named Rip. And James Spader, though, I was cracking up and was seeing him walking around in the big trench coat. Because back then, that's what, you know, trench coat equals drug dealer and that's Doom.
Slick back hair.
And slick back hair. Kind of like the video game Narc. You know, when you shoot, when your first level, you're shooting up a bunch of guys that look like James Spader in trench coats.
Well, one of the great things about this movie is because it's in the 80s, it is ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
My favorite,
like, everything's like, the walls are pink and like everybody's running around looking like a
everything's
black
ugly.
Douchebag. Like everything's ugly.
But back then it was cool to be ugly. Actually, my favorite part is like when James Spader is, Clay goes to see Rip at the, at his house and he's talking on the phone, which, by the way, Rip's line, he says like a million times. Do you know who you're fucking talking to?
Who do you think you're talking to?
Who do you think you're talking to? I got a phone that I talk on and I put it in the water.
Yeah, he's on like a cell phone.
He's on
a huge cell phone.
Huge cell
phone.
And
it's yellow. Because if you remember, if anybody out there remembers growing up in like the late 80s, early 90s, when the sports Walkman and like any sports thing
yellow.
Was bright yellow.
Well, you know why? Because those things were floatable. So apparently.
That's exactly what his phone was.
And
he like puts it.
Waterproof or something.
He puts it. Speaker side, number side down, and just like lets
water.
It float in the water.
But like, how does that happen? And Wang's okay, why is that not possible today? If it was possible in the 80s, why did they abandon this technology for people that drop their phones in the toilet?
Don't you mean like me?
Or you know, or any number of iPhone users or people that you have their phones and they're like, they drop the phone in the toilet and I guess, and they go, oh, I guess I'm fucked. Not James Spader.
No.
Not Rip. He was a drug dealer and he had this shit on lockdown.
Yeah, he had better technology than we have today.
Yes.
My personal favorite scene, well, it's a tie. My second favorite scene is the one where they're driving through a tunnel and like 20 feet in front of them, they see a coyote and then they stop and she goes, we hit it. Which, no, they didn't. They came nowhere close to it. In the book, she totally hits it. That's not the point. But like, she's like, oh no. And then they get out and have like some conversation about how like doing cocaine is wrong, which was just stupid. And she's like going to walk down the street in her short little skirt and her big heels. And then she just gets back in the car. And then my favorite scene is they're, like, leaving a club and making out, like, Clay and the chick. And they're, like, totally Blair. Making out. And he stops in the middle of the road in L.A., okay? Just, there's no one around, somehow, in L.A. He stops in the middle of the road, and they're totally making out. And then, like, 40 Harleys just, like, drive by. So they're just, like, making out in the car.
It fascinates me in film.
I'm like, who the fuck thought that was a good idea?
It fascinates me in film that in L.A.,
everybody
could drive really well. Which, granted, I know it would be a really boring movie
if
people...
If everybody was stuck
like,
in traffic
yeah,
all
like,
the time.
For instance, like, you know, get him to the... Unless you're supposed to be stuck in traffic. But, like, for instance, like, get him to the Greek. You know, Jonah Hill's, like, racing back and forth everywhere in his car. And I'm like, how is that possible?
It's not possible.
You're driving on Wilshire Boulevard, you're fucked.
Yeah.
You know, pretty much.
No matter what time of day it is.
No matter what time of day, it's always fucked. It's a big fuck fest as far as driving goes out here.
Yeah.
But, and obviously...
Apparently in all these movies, nobody gets
a nobody
shit.
But nobody... Yeah, apparently you can just stop your car and bang and have...
will just drive around
and
you and
the
leave
Harley
you alone.
Have the Harley serenade you as I drive by, which is just... That was kind
Sons of... Sons of Anarchy just drive right by you.
If that was the case... Actually, if that was the Sons of Anarchy, that'd be great because they probably would have stopped and asked for some intel and then they would have...
They'd have been like, wait, we're trying to gather more intel, because that's all Sons of Anarchy ever does.
Gather some intel. Did you know where's Opie, or whatever. Or
where's my kid?
Where's Abel? I'm looking for
Abel
in your trunk.
I fucking love Sons of Anarchy, but goddamn that stupid show.
Anyways, we're not talking about TV.
That's not the point.
It's just TV we haven't seen.
Watch
it. Movies we haven't seen.
Watch Sons of Anarchy if you haven't. It'll be like one of those shows that you love, but you fucking hate at the same time.
Well, should we do... Maybe we should do a bonus movie that we haven't seen.
What bonus movie?
We watched the Ron Perlman movie.
Oh, motherfucker, yes we did. Because I love Ron Perlman, which is one of the reasons I watched Sons of Anarchy.
Well, here's the thing.
I started watching Sons of Anarchy because of Henry Rollins, but then Ron Perlman, and then Katie Sagal. So anyway, continue on.
So here's the thing. Okay, we were trying to figure out, you know, watch a movie. And here's the thing, and I think we might make this a segment. We'll try to keep it brief here, but if you go deep into Netflix instant queue, you'll find some magnificent things.
Oh, yes.
And
amazing things.
I came across this movie called Tinseltown, which the only thing, and I wonder if this is the actual DVD cover, but all the DVD cover is a picture of Ron Perlman's face lit up by a mag light as if he's telling a spooky ghost story.
Yeah, and he looks very serious.
The movie was done in 1997, stars Ron Perlman as a guy, as a super of a storage unit who apparently lets everybody live there.
Yeah, there's no stuff in the storage unit.
Just people. He keeps people. But he's a dude there, and he's an aspiring...
And he wears overalls with no shirt.
He's an aspiring actor who's doing this movie about a serial killer that's currently killing at the time. And he's doing it with Christy Swanson, who's like a USC student.
Yeah, but the people who are really important are the two dudes who would first think he's the actual killer, the writers.
Well, the thing is, yeah.
So they're going to be like, oh, we need to write this movie about him. So we're going to write the movie about this guy who's the killer. So they think he's the actual killer. Turns out, no, he's not the killer. He's in this movie. So when they're trying to film this movie about him being the killer, he's filming a movie about being the killer.
And they find all the stuff about his stuff. Yeah, they find all the stuff about him being the killer. I think he's the killer because he has all these wigs and all these deals, and just because he's researching, because he's Ron Perlman. Because honestly,
Ron Perlman is Ron Perlman.
And I picture because Ron Perlman probably is that well versed in like doing that stuff. So it's one of those movies about, you know, being in Hollywood and trying to get it right. And Ron Perlman just goes around doing all these different things. And I wasn't aware that, you know, I've only known him from Hellboy, Beauty and the Beast, Sons of Anarchy. You know, I haven't really seen him in a lot of other stuff that I probably should see.
Season of the Witch?
Well, Season of the Witch, that's coming soon. And Blade Trinity. Yeah, he's in that as well. But he's done, he's in this movie, he's just, you know, just running the gamut of different acting styles just because he's being goofy on purpose. His character is purposely being goofy, but he's doing, it's a lot of fun. And
well, he does have a master's degree in
He does. But, I mean, there's like a lot of, you know, goofiness going on. And Joe Pantoliano... He's in this movie.
Joey Pants,
and he's living in a bathroom for some reason as a producer.
Yeah, no one actually lives in a house.
There's no houses. It's very cheaply done, and that's probably, you know, why they got it made.
At Christmas time, so like nothing is open, and there's like bows on things all over the place.
So I don't know if I read the ending. I'm not gonna give away the ending, but the ending's kind of lame because it kind of comes out of nowhere. Where you're like, hey, who's that guy, and why does he have to do anything with this story?
It's one of those movies. It's like, this is how you make it in Hollywood. This is what it's like to make it in Hollywood.
Yes,
that it's one of those movies, and it's just really, it's weird and like
it's cheap. It's weird. Cheap.
It's bizarre. There's like a dude, like the serial killer's like shooting people full of Windex, and like. You're in a movie within a movie within a movie. It's like one of those things, and whatever. It had Ron Perlman in it.
Ron Perlman's
in it. So
if
you like Ron Perlman,
he's goofy.
Watch it.
He's goofy,
He recites Shakespeare and whatever. So if you like him, watch it.
Yes, so watch.
I don't even know. Oh, and if you like Joey Pants, I guess watch
Joey Pantoliano.
He's annoying.
Which is weird because I just for some reason I'm picturing it's like, well, 2 years later, you were in The Matrix and you were bald. And this is freaking me out, but... I think I guess to sum it up, it's called Tinseltown. Though if you can find it on Netflix, you should watch it.
Netflix.
It will not be on the AFI list.
No, it will not be on any list.
Not be on any list except for the list of movies that Ron Perlman was in that nobody will ever see except for us. but I guess getting back to real quickly to Lesson Zero, I guess there's some final thoughts. Boo.
I honestly I wouldn't watch it. Okay, maybe because I'm colored. By reading the book.
Mm.
But I wouldn't watch it. It wasn't the movie I wanted to see based on what I'd read in the book. And, according to the internet, Bret Easton Ellis actually did not like this movie when it first came out.
Well, of course he wouldn't, because it's
totally different than the source material.
Because Hollywood felt that they needed to make this more accessible. And you know what? Honestly, it's... That's the thing, though. Like, you think when you're making a movie like this, you have to have some sort of likable character. So who are you gonna have? You gotta have Clay, and he's gotta be. You gotta take out as much of the bile
that
he's
dealing with. You don't want the snuff films or the raping of the
or the bisexuality or things that people that wouldn't think wouldn't get
at the dead body in the alley that people just poke with a stick and fucking never call the cops on. Yeah, you probably can't have any.
Yeah, so you gotta have at least one sane character, and then you have his other, you know, and then you have everybody else being decadent, and, you know, Robert Downey Jr., which I think was... Okay, here's the thing. He dies at the end.
Yeah,
right?
He does.
He dies randomly. Like, he's okay for once, and then he just all of a sudden he's like...
He's fine for, like, 12 hours. He has not touched a drug for, like, 12 hours, and he just fucking dies for no reason. He's just like... He just dies.
He just dies or driving, and it's like, no, he's dead.
And then they're like, oh, come with me. Come away with me to college.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was,
stupid.
Honestly, it was for a movie that I guess a lot of people would say is culturally relevant because of the drug culture from the 80s and, or just like from, you know, Reddy Snell's work and just having that significance. It just did not measure up to something that I thought was just going to be more like gritty, and I was thinking Requiem for a Dream.
I was really hoping for gritty.
And like Traffic and just something really more dirty, and it was not nearly as dirty. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, dirty stuff in it, you know, but it wasn't nearly as shocking as it's incredibly tame.
Yeah, it's very tame. So if you want, you know, whatever, watch that. But I would just recommend read the book. It's honestly, it's one of those things that I don't think I can name a movie that I've seen that differs so far from the actual source material. And I've read a ton of books that have been made out of movies. I don't think I can think of one other one that's ever gone that far away from the book.
It was, yeah.
Like,
I mean,
it was, they're night and day. They're not even the same thing. They just have the same title and the same character names. They're not even close to the same thing. So read the book. Go to your library. Check out the book.
So listen, Daryl, read it. Don't watch it.
Right.
Tinseltown. If you're a Ron Perlman fan, watch it.
Sure.
Ron Perlman, yeah. And what's Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid?
See that when you're not tired.
See it, and drink lots of coffee and be wired.
See it when you're not tired,
and you'll probably enjoy it.
So. All right.
So yeah. But make sure you check us out on Twitter at Haven't Seen It Pod.
Yes, and our Tumblr is Haven't Seen It. .tumblr.com.
Mm-hmm.
You can follow me on Twitter at Jen Stansfield.
And me on Twitter at Angry Hero Sean, S-H-A-W-N.
And I've got a Tumblr that is boring, but you can check it out if you want. JenStansfield.tumblr.com.
I think that's it. So yeah, well, next week hopefully we'll have some more movies to do. We have Citizen Kane on deck.
We have it on deck.
We're going to watch
it.
We're going to watch Homer Simpson with his copy of Fiddler on the Roof. I plan to watch it someday.
It'll happen eventually.
It's going to happen. So hopefully we'll do that, and maybe something all deep off of Netflix, and maybe something else kind of goofy that you guys will enjoy.
Alrighty. Thanks so much for listening. Bye.